Ben Nicholson-Smith from the At the Letters podcast on Sportsnet and from Sportsnet.ca. Ben, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. Take us back to last night, 8-5 win over the Red Sox. And I'll start kind of with an individual question. I mean, what have you seen as the year has gone on? We are seeing a completely different Randall Grichuk now than we saw in April, May, and June.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think some of that has to do with injury. Some of that has to do with the really abysmal start that he got off to offensively. But what we're seeing now is what the Blue Jays were hoping for and expecting when they traded for him in the offseason. And really, that's a player who gives you some very good defense in right field and combines it with some pretty impressive power at the plate from the right side. So that's a combination that really drew the Blue Jays to Grichuk in the offseason. And now we're seeing it. We're seeing the kind of impact that that can have. And I'm sure that the Jays are really happy with what they're seeing from Grichuk, because really he's showing that he can be an everyday player at the major league level.
Pardon my ignorance, Ben, but what's his service time like? Like, what's his future in terms of, you know, do the Blue Jays see him as a core player down the road?
Yeah, I think that he's got a chance to be here for a few years. When you look at his service, he's got at least 2, maybe 3 more years with the Blue Jays. Don't have it right in front of me right now, but he's someone who can help this team as they move ahead. And I think, you know, really, even if he's not going to be the cornerstone guy, clearly that's Vlad Jr., Bo Bichette, maybe a couple other guys like Justin Smoak fall into that category. But Randall Grichuk doesn't have to be that guy. Still, though, you're going to need a lot of complementary pieces, guys who can hit you 20 homers with good defense, and he's showing that he can do that.
Now, the other part of last night that I'd be curious your take on is Ryan Borucki. I mean, again, I'm not sure if I'm way off on this or haven't been paying attention, but did this guy come out of nowhere? Was this expected? Or, you know, are the Blue Jays kind of pleasantly surprised with what Borucki has given them this season?
Well, I think that they're definitely pleasantly surprised with the way that his season has gone. And, you know, how could you be anything but impressed that a guy who's come up and faced some really good offenses and really never lost his composure, kept throwing strikes, kept attacking hitters. So I think there's a lot of reason to be impressed. As for his path to the major leagues, there was hope in spring training that he could emerge as a viable starter. And I say that it was hope because you can never make this assumption that, you know, going into the year, he had a couple of starts at AAA, but really not enough to say that he is definitely on the cusp of being a big league ready starter. And now here he is succeeding. And I think last night was really a great example of the kind of progress that he's made, because the Red Sox, as you guys know, such an impressive offense, and really going up against them is a challenge for any pitcher. But Borucki kept attacking, and with a few exceptions, I mean, he walked Bogarts twice, he walked Pierce to lead off an inning, and Mookie Betts, of course, continues to hit him hard. But that's going to happen. You're facing the Boston Red Sox, you're not going to be perfect, and he still managed to make it through 5 innings, find a way to get the Jays a chance to win a game that they actually did end up winning.
Ben Nicholson-Smith is our guest from Sportsnet as we're talking all things Blue Jays. By the way, they will open up a weekend series tonight at home against the Tampa Bay Rays with Marco Estrada on the mound. Now, you know, just quickly on the Red Sox, because they're having such a great season, and another injury perhaps is you know, keeping Mike Trout from the MVP honors. But does this, you know, is this a runaway victory for Mookie Betts, or am I missing something?
Oh, I definitely wouldn't call it a runaway. Not when Trout expected back this weekend, and he has got a chance to do some serious damage in the last 6 weeks of the season. But Mookie Betts, you know, absolutely belongs at the forefront of that conversation. I think J.D. Martinez as well. I think Jose Ramirez has to be in that group too. So you really got 4 guys between Trout, Betts, J.D. Martinez, and Ramirez who have a legitimate shot at winning the award. And at this point, I mean, you look at what Mookie Betts has done, not just last night, but in the course of this entire season, playing second base when they need him, playing right field at a really high level, doing great work on the base paths. I mean, it's almost Trout-esque in the fact that he does absolutely everything well on a baseball field.
The second, we'll get to, you know, some of the exciting Blue Jay news stories in just a second, because it all has to do, funny enough, with the Buffalo Bisons. But, Ben, last note kind of on this big league club today, and that is the fact that, you know, we're hearing a lot the last week or so, and now as we get into August and we're getting closer to the end of the season, we're hearing more and more about the future for John Gibbons. How do you read that situation? Do you think he lasts the entire season? And you know, at this point, I think there'd be more surprise than not if he was back for 2019. How do you read the entire situation with the Blue Jays manager?
Yeah, I do think it'd be a surprise if he's back in 2019. So then the question becomes, if he is going to be dismissed, how does that happen and when? And you would think that for a guy who's been in this organization for a very long time, as someone who continues to be a part of their planning as they look ahead, that the Blue Jays would find a way to do this tactfully and gracefully, and maybe even with some input from Gibbons or his coaching staff as far as what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. I think he's certainly earned that much respect, not to just be discarded at the first sign of a three-game losing streak, for example. So I think that's the how part. And then as for the when, it could be, you know, I wouldn't think it's imminent. I mean, they've certainly been playing some decent baseball. It's not as though the clubhouse is in disarray. There's no reason to dismiss him, but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point in September they do dismiss him and move on, partly because if you do officially part ways with your manager, then it kind of puts a for-hire sign up on the organization, and that allows the Blue Jays to start having conversations within the industry about who will eventually be that replacement for John Gibbons.
You mentioned it. He's been in this organization for a long time. Of course, he guided them back to the playoffs in 2015 and 2016. How do you think his legacy is viewed by Blue Jay fans?
I think his legacy is he's the second greatest manager in the history of a franchise that's been around for more than 40 years, and that's pretty good. Cito Gaston, of course, two World Series. You're not going to top that easily, but John Gibbons, in my opinion, I don't think that there's that much of a compelling argument on the other side. I think he's the second best manager. I mean, he's led them to the ALCS two times. He's been around. He's seen a lot of things. You think about some of the great players in Blue Jays history, whether it's Roy Halladay or Carlos Delgado or Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion. All these guys have played under John Gibbons, and he's really been here for a significant chunk of Blue Jays history. And so his legacy, you know, aside from his Gibbyisms and his entertaining demeanor, I think when you look at the results on the field, that really speaks for itself, and the win column is there to back that up.
It's funny you mention that, because I was going to say, like, you know, you've had interactions with him face-to-face, and we just see him on TV and hear him in interviews, but it's a pretty hard guy to hate in John Gibbons, hey?
Yeah, I mean, he's someone who just wants to get along with people. He's someone who enjoys baseball and is definitely obsessed with baseball. He's a lot smarter than I think a lot of people give him credit for. So I hope that he gets the chance to go out, to some extent on his own terms. And I do hope, too, that at some point there's a chance to recognize him, because he's really become a beloved figure by a lot of fans in Toronto. And even if there's a new manager here next year, there probably should come a time when the Jays bring him back. I probably wouldn't be next year, but probably at some point in the future, and find a way to honor his contributions to the Jays.
Now, Ben Nicholson-Smith, by the way, is our guest. We'll shift gears a little bit here, Ben. And I know the ranking story just got updated this week, and you know the trade deadline's now passed, so that obviously allows a company like Baseball America to change their prospect rankings. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the Blue Jays farm system found themselves in the top 10. Can you just speak to the overhaul that really has been done by Shapiro and Atkins, you know, since Alex Anthopoulos left, and you know that 2016 playoff team was essentially, you know, those 2 years that they went to the playoffs, they essentially gutted their farm system. So can you just talk about the work that's been done and the fact that, you know, it doesn't seem like there's been major impact moves, but everything's kind of going right now at a very steady climb, and I think it's something that should be noted.
Definitely should be noted. And, you know, right now, as we talk here, the Jays rank third according to Baseball America and their prospect rankings, fifth according to MLB Pipeline. So very, very deep farm system right now, and a farm system that has some of the best prospects in baseball. So I think that definitely Shapiro and Atkins deserve credit for really prioritizing the farm system and prioritizing player development. There's no question about that, and that's probably their biggest achievement so far, is to turn the farm system around into a really good spot. Now, I don't want to ignore the fact that Alex Anthopoulos and Tony LaCava and Andrew Tinnish and a lot of people were working to build this farm system up before these guys got here. And I think, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. would be the first example of someone who was signed under the previous regime. So, of course, assigning credit to these things is always tricky, but the bottom line is Ross Atkins is the GM of this team now, and they have a very good farm system, and one that really should give Blue Jays fans hope for the next couple of years. I don't think 2019 is likely to be a kind of return to the playoffs right away, but it could be a bridge year before 2020, when realistically this team could be a lot better on the field.
You know, you talk about Blue Jay top prospects. Obviously, Vlad Jr.'s first on the list. Bo Bichette comes up fairly quickly, as does Kevin Biggio. But I want to talk about a guy you talked with on the latest At the Letters podcast. And I've asked you about him before, I believe, Ben. But just tell us about Danny Jansen and the fact that this guy is really on the verge of becoming an everyday big leaguer.
Yeah, he is. And it's really hard-earned. I mean, he's someone who dealt with a lot of injuries coming up early in his minor league career. Then last year, he broke out with just an incredible season. Saw him go through three levels, high A, double A, all the way up to triple A. And along the way, he was walking more often than he struck out. And, you know, when you think about today's game, so many strikeouts, it's so rare for a hitter to have that kind of pitch recognition and plate discipline. But Danny Jansen has it. He has some power. He's worked very hard on his receiving, on his relationships with pitchers. There is a lot that goes into being a young catcher in the major leagues, and the expectations are high, and they come from a lot of different directions. So when you think about defense, working with pitchers, and offense. So it's a big task, but he is on the brink right now. I think within the next few weeks, we will see him in a Toronto Blue Jays uniform, and that's going to be a really exciting moment for Jansen and for the franchise too, because he's someone that is a big part of their hopes as they try to return to contention.
It's probably been a while, Ben, since you've been this deep in an interview and not mentioned Vlad Guerrero Jr., but he has certainly stepped up in Buffalo and been able to continue stepping up his game, which is crazy about it. And the one tweet that you sent out a couple of days ago, or actually it would be earlier today, that has caught a lot of people and has got a lot of traction is his OPS just continues to climb every single level. Now, again, speaking in reality terms, we're not going to probably see him in Toronto until late April in 2019, but just take us through the buzz in Toronto, and obviously people are itching to see this guy, but probably also understanding of the service time and how the clock works. But just what's the buzz like right now in Toronto when it comes to this young man?
Yeah, the buzz is definitely there, I think, at least as far as I can tell with, you know, my friends who follow the Jays, with fellow writers who are constantly monitoring the Bison scores from the press box. You're always trying to see what Vlad Jr. is doing. And the reason for that is he's doing things that no other hitter is doing in the minor leagues. It's incredibly impressive to put these offensive numbers up regardless of age. And then when you consider that he's 19 years old and that until this year, he had never even played above high A, then it becomes that much more impressive. And you can really see why publications like Baseball America rank him as the best prospect in all of baseball. So, as you said, we are not likely to see him in the major leagues this year. That's frustrating, of course. It's a big picture issue that Major League Baseball faces when it comes to getting their best young players up to the majors as soon as possible. But I can't wait to see him up here, because really, this is a special talent, and it's fun watching baseball players who are just better than the other baseball players that they're facing.
And it's kind of ignorant knowing there's still 2 months left in the season, but I imagine as a guy who covers this team on a day-to-day basis, you're probably looking forward to spring training next season because of that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Watching Vlad Jr. this spring training was fun, because he at the time was 18, turning 19, and it was incredible, because even then you can get a sense of his plate discipline. Most of the time in spring training you see guys and they're up there getting their cuts in. They're not too selective when it comes to batting practice or simulated games, the kind of things that you do early in spring when you're getting ready to start game action. And Vlad Jr., though, it could have been a pitcher throwing live batting practice. It could have been some sort of sim game. And he would just sit on his pitch. If it wasn't the one for him, a slider off the plate, fastball is a little bit too far up and in, he would wait on it. And I think that discipline, seeing that in spring training, was an eye-opener. It was a sign of things to come for a very, very disciplined hitter, someone who's really opposite to his father in that way. And so I'm definitely looking forward to watching him next spring.
Just a couple more for you, Ben. I know there's a lot of gray area or question marks around who's going to start for this team on Monday. I know that obviously Thomas Pinon was recalled yesterday. There's a chance he could get that nod. But also a lot of people talking about Sean Reed Foley. His climb has been nice in the minor ranks as well. And I would imagine if it's not Monday, we are going to see Reed Foley make his big league debut at some point before the end of the season, correct?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think it'll be Monday. I think that when you look at Kansas City, a team that's struggling, an environment that's relatively low pressure compared to a Boston or New York, and a big ballpark, that is a really nice way for a pitcher to make his major league debut, and that's not lost on the Blue Jays. So I think he's likely to get that start. Some of that depends on this weekend, whether the Blue Jays need Thomas Pinnone in relief. You know, for example, Marco Estrada pitches one inning tonight and, you know, his glute acts up. Well, at that point, Pinnone's coming into the game, and that pretty much puts Reed Foley in for sure on Monday. But even if the Blue Jays don't need Thomas Pinnone in the bullpen this weekend, I think that he's the likely option to see Reed Foley in Kansas City on Monday. And again, this is, you know, it's fun seeing these guys make their debuts. It's fun seeing what they can do at the highest level, because it is a big adjustment, and it's an important adjustment for a team that's going to be relying a lot on young players in the next couple of years.
And I guess to wrap things up, maybe put you on the spot a little bit, and I apologize for that, but, you know, September call-ups are coming. What names should Blue Jay fans be watching for? Who are you expecting to see when those rosters open up in, you know, about 3 weeks here?
Yeah, I think Danny Jansen will be one of those names to watch, just no question. Usually you're looking at a third catcher that comes up, so that would be one name to watch. And I think typically you're looking at relievers, too. You just think about modern bullpens and how many relievers they mix in. So I'd point to a guy like Tim Mesa, who's down there right now, potentially a Craig Breslow. I'm sure that he would love to. He's been grinding away, but also struggling at AAA. No guarantee there for Breslow. You could even look to a guy like David Polino, who was one of the players acquired in the trade for Roberto Osuna, and he would have a chance to come up as well. So I think relievers, probably, you know, maybe a Jansen would be the best prospect that you would see, along with a Reed Foley. But you're probably not going to see Vlad Jr. or Bo Bichette, and that's going to test fans' patience until at some point next spring.
Ben, always fun to chat. We'll let you go. I know it's a busy day for you, so appreciate the time, and I'm sure we'll catch up very soon. But thanks for this today.
Sounds good, guys. Looking forward to it.
You bet. There is Ben Nicholson-Smith.